بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم إن الحمد لله نحمده سبحانه وتعالى ونستعين به ونستغفره ونعوذ بالله من شرور أنفسنا ومن سيئات أعمالنا من يهد الله فلا مضل له ومن يضلل فلا هادي له ونشهد أن لا إله إلا الله وحده لا شريك له ونشهد أن محمد عبده ورسوله صلى الله تعالى عليه وسلم فإن خير الحديث من كتاب الله وخير هدي هدي محمد صلى الله تعالى عليه وسلم وشر الأمور محدثاتها وكل محدثة بدعة وكل بدعة ضلال وكل ضلالة في النار أما بعد السلام عليكم ورحمة الله تعالى وبركاته يقول سبحانه وتعالى في القرآن العظيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم ألف لام را تلك آيات الكتاب المبين إنا أرسلناه قرآنا عربيا لعلكم تعقلون نحن نقص عليك أحسن القصص بما أوحينا إليك هذا القرآن وإن كنت من قبله لمن الغافلين إذ قال يوسف لأبيه يا أبت إني رأيت أحد عشر كوكبا والشمس والقمر رأيتهم لي ساجدين قال يا بني لا تقصص رؤياك على إخوتك فيكيدوا لك كيدا إن الشيطان للإنسان عدو مبين وكذلك يجتبيك ربك ويعلمك من تأويل الأحاديث ويتم نعمته عليك وعلى آل يعقوب كما أتمها على أبويك من قبل إبراهيم وإسحاق إن ربك عليم حكيم لقد كان في يوسف وإخوته آية للسائلين إذ قالوا ليوسف وأخوه أحب إلى أبينا منا ونحن عصبة إن أبانا لفي ضلال مبين. In the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Most Merciful, we bear witness that nothing should be worshipped except Allah, and we forever bear witness that Muhammad ibn Abdullah is the messenger of Allah and the seal of our prophets. We bear witness that whom Allah guides, nothing can misguide them. And we bear witness that whom Allah allows to go astray, because they have rejected the truth, that there is no one or anything that can guide them. My respected brothers and sisters, I want to spend a few moments, briefly, talking about from freedom to captivity. In this great chapter of the Quran entitled Surah Yusuf, we see in the beginning Alif, Lam, and Ra, verily these are the signs of the book of clarity. Verily we have revealed unto you this Quran in the Arabic language that you may understand. Verily we reveal unto you the best of stories. The best. Some of the best stories of humanity, right here. The best of stories of humanity. In the Quran. Verily we have revealed unto you this guidance of the Quran, and indeed before it was revealed you were of those who were not mindful. Verily Yusuf said to his father, O my father, verily I have seen 11 stars or planets, the sun and the moon bowing unto me. Verily his father said, O Yusuf, do not reveal unto your brothers your vision, for indeed they will plot against you. I want you to focus on that. Do not reveal unto your brothers your vision, for your brothers will betray you. Not someone outside, but someone on the inside. He says, verily Satan is unto man an evil enemy. Verily we shall test you, and we shall teach you of the interpretations. and verily complete our favor upon you as we have done for the children of Yaqub and on your parents before Ibrahim and Ishaq. Verily your Lord is forever wise. Verily in the story of Yusuf and his brothers is a sign for those who are seekers of truth. Verily the brothers of Yusuf said, verily Yusuf and his brother are more loved by our father than we are. Why have I chosen this particular chapter today? One is because Yusuf was sold into slavery. Slavery is a very old, wicked institution. And many people have suffered. No one has a monopoly on suffering. Africans have suffered, Europeans have suffered, Muslims have suffered, Jews have suffered, women have suffered. The Chinese have a history of their own. In America, the Native Indians, the Protestants, the Catholics, people all over the world have experienced at some time some level of suffering. So no one race of people can claim that their story is the most important story of all stories of human suffering. No. But many have suffered. But one of the things that I like to do is not focus too much on the darkest moments of human tragedy, but the lessons that can be learned. Because if I stood here today and I told you all of the things that Africans who came into the shores of North America, all that they've been through, it would sadden you, and 45 minutes would not be enough. If you knew the amount of atrocities that were openly committed against a people that was legally classified as merchandise, who were sold, who were hung, who were raped, who were set on fire, who were totally destroyed. If I told you the tragedy of their experience, you would become extremely depressed and sad, because it's one of the wickedest institutions that has ever touched on the planet in human experience. So I don't want to spend a lot of time on that. What I would say that you should study that experience, because many of those experiences, we see them still resurfacing today, not only within our country, but all over the world. So there are lessons to be learned from captivity. One of the things I like to focus on is cause and effect. Cause. One of the causes of that experience called slavery, and it's a hard thing to discuss, because when you talk about racism and slavery and gender relationships, and you talk about poverty and oppression, it's very sensitive, because sometimes the people that are guilty are present. Like if I give a lecture on respecting the nobility, not of Muslim women, but of all women. If there's a brother who is oppressive to his wife and he is not respecting her, he will get very angry during the speech. Because you're talking, he thinks I'm talking about him, but I'm not talking about him. I'm talking about the characteristics that men have displayed over the years as it comes to dealing with the rights of women, whether it's in Islam or out of Islam. For even in American history, women could not vote nor own property. They were deprived of many privileges that were only for white males only. So there are things that you say can make people like feel that, okay, you're talking about me. No, speaking in general terms today. So now, Yusuf, sold, betrayed by his own brothers. The African who came to America, unfortunately, was sold by his own brothers. Oh yeah. And a lot of times when we talk to brothers from Africa, it becomes very intense, because they have been turned on us and we were turned on them. Because historically, we know they sold us. Because even today in Africa, today as we speak, you can go today in certain parts of Africa and still buy black people today. Right now, you can still go to Africa and buy human beings today. You can still go into the world of Islam today and see human beings being desecrated and mistreated either because of the pigmentation of their skin or the poverty status in which they hold. You can see it all over. Many Muslim countries have built skyscrapers in their country on the backs of poor Muslims from Asia who they treat like slaves and have no regard for their humanity, and yet we make Salat and we make the Adhan. It's real, we can't deny it. It's real. How many businesses and countries go into places like India and Bangladesh and Sri Lanka and other places and bring them into other parts of the world of Islam and subjugate those people and rob them of their humanity and even prohibit them the freedom of movement, and yet they're all Muslims. It's real. But in most places, it's not discussed because it's so ugly and tabooish that no one wants to face evil for what it truly is. But in order for a person who is sick to be healed, it takes a good doctor to give a diagnosis and tell you, you do have cancer. No, it's not diabetes. This is cancer that we're dealing with. But some people don't want to hear the truth. They don't want to hear the truth. And as long as we live in a state of denial, we will never have the privilege and the honor of being a free people. So the beauty of one of the things in Surah Yusuf is something that I discovered recently. You notice in Surah Yusuf, he never did tell his brothers about his dream. So why were they plotting against him? Yusuf never told his brothers about his dream. Why were they plotting for his destruction? The Quran says it. They said, oh, our father, he has more love for Yusuf and his brother Benjamin than he has for us. Now, why do I say that? Brothers and sisters, one of the greatest classified highly secrets that you should keep is your love. A woman said to her husband one day, she said, you know, honey, we should keep our love a secret. And her husband said, what do you mean a secret? You're my wife. I married you in front of all the community. The imam performed our wedding. Your father gave you to me in marriage with your permission. How could our love be a secret? And she said that when you show your affection for me in front of members of your family, she said, you know, your mother, she has not seen your father in 3 years because he works overseas. So when you show affection and you cater to me, it causes your mother some grief because she misses her husband. Not that she has any bad intention. And she said, when your sister sees the love that you have for me, she reflects on the love that you shared together as brother and sister, and she feels deprived. So she said, keep your love a secret. Now, some of you may not realize this. Our children sometimes, they watch us and they'll talk to themselves. You know, daddy, I think he loves Aisha more than us. You ever notice he's always taking Aisha to the mall and he takes Aisha to school and he's always saying to Aisha, do you want something, you know, from the store? But he don't ask us anything. So the boys begin to attack Aisha. Oh yeah, it happens. Or you have two sons, Abdullah and Ahmed. They're both fighting for your love. They're both fighting for your love. But sometimes we're not aware of the competition. And as a result of that, animosity is building, and then there's a tragedy. And sometimes you don't know the tragedy until many, many, many years later. You say, I didn't know. So why do I say that? I believe that a people that desires to be free, real freedom I'm talking about, they should keep their desire for freedom and their strategies a total secret. Don't tell nobody. Because a slave master or an oppressor who knows that you seek your freedom will do everything within their power to deny you such freedom. You know, in American history, if a slave had the desire for freedom, they would kill him in front of other slaves. If you ran away and they caught you, they would cut off your feet, your ears, clip your tongue, and take a metal hot iron rod and brand you on your back with an R for runaway slave, so that all the other slaves would know, don't ever try to run from here. Don't run. Why do I say that? Today in the world of Islam, many of us, we have a mind of a slave, and we're scared of our own freedom. We're scared to be free. We struggle internally and psychologically, hoping to assimilate with others as opposed to just being ourselves. There's great power in being who you are, because at the end of the day, as a human being, the only person you can ever be is the person who Allah made you. Anything else, you will never accomplish it. Never. So now, in the history of Islam, what was the gateway to emancipation? The Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alayhi wa sallam, one of the things that he expressed in emancipating the people was he gave them the message of La ilaha illallah Muhammad Rasulullah. It's a very powerful message. The message of La ilaha illallah Muhammad Rasulullah is very powerful. It's so powerful, the only thing that the people in power are afraid of people in America, is accepting Islam. Because Islam is very powerful. When you accept that there is nothing to be worshipped except the creator of the heavens and the earth, and that you have no master other than God, and that no man is a superior to another man, it's all over. What does the Quran say? Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Ya ayyuha an-nas, inna khalaqnakum min dhakarin wa untha, waja'alnakum shu'uban wa qabaila lita'arafu, inna akramakum indallahi atqakum. O people, we have created you male and female from one single essence. We have made you into nations and into tribes, that you may know yourself and that you may know one another, and know that the best of you in the eyes of Allah, it is not the black, the white, the rich, the poor, the male or the female, the Arab or the non-Arab, but the greatest of you in the eyes of the originator of all creation is he or she who is most righteous. That is a revolutionary message. It is the destruction of white supremacy or nationalism on any level. And when you do that, you set the captive free. It's a very powerful message. You set the captive free. And that puts inside the heart of the believer a spirit of fearlessness. Because one of the ways in making a slave accept captivity is you have to program the mind. You have to program the mind. There's some people, they are a byproduct of generational, institutionalized slave thinking. I'll give you an example. As Muslims, we have the same problem. Let me give you an example. In most Muslim countries, if you speak English, you're gonna get a job, you're gonna get better salary. Oh yeah, if you get a degree from the West and you can speak English, with a sense of, and you dress like this, you know, you put the suit and tie on, you, let's go, you know, you get a good job. Let's be fair, I can take a white person from America right now who is a janitor, dress him up with a suit and tie, take him overseas in some Muslim countries with me, even though he works for me, when they see me and him together, they will assume automatically he's my boss. Oh, they would. I'm the driver. They'll think, oh, that's the driver. They would. How did it come that way? How come today one of the number one creams that is sold all over the world of Asian Africa is called Light and Lovely? What happened? We're not proud of the color in which we have? While we're trying to get lighter, they're trying to get darker. They got suntan lotion and suntan institutions that they go into, and they go to the beaches, and we're trying to get lighter, they're trying to get darker. Why? Because it's a psychological war game that is deeply rooted in not only hatred for you, but also hatred for themselves, and it's in direct opposition to God. This is why in slavery, they took religion from the slave. Those slaves that were came to America, no slave came to America that was a Christian, no one. And if you became a Christian by law as a slave and you were baptized, you still were not free. And your children were born into captivity. Why? Because the brand of Christianity that they created was rooted in racial supremacy. That's why the God image of Jesus is blue eyes and blonde hair. There's a reason for that. Because if you think that's God, then your master can only be God. It's the reality. That's why in Islam we have no images. We don't have an image of God. We don't have an image of any prophets. We don't have an image of saints. If you use such terminology, why? Because images can last for generations. Image is powerful. You see, in my conclusion, when they portray Islam in mass media as the institution and the people of terrorism, right? Psychologically, people buy into it. I was with a lady on the plane coming here, 72 years old. And she said to me, you know, this is a Christian country. She said, and Jesus, oh sweet Jesus, is the Savior. And I said to her, I said, ma'am, this is a Christian country? I said, in what sense do you mean that? Do you mean the Constitution? Do you mean when we stole the land from the Native Indians? Do you mean it's Christian when we had slavery and the Jim Crow laws and segregation? Do you mean in terms of what? She said, she looked at me, and brothers and sisters, she would not talk to me for the next 2 hours. Once, don't laugh, once I disagreed with her false assessment that America was founded on the principles of Christianity, she didn't want to talk to me to no more. Because America is not founded on the teachings of Jesus. If America was founded on the principles of righteousness, there would be no America, because thou shalt not steal. There was 112 million Native Indians on this part of the North American continent, and today there's less than 4 million of them in America. What happened to those people? Where are they? Where are those people that were here before anyone came from the outside? They're gone. And let me tell you this as I conclude. When you speak about the suffering of the Native Indians, people of privilege, they shut down. They don't want to hear it. Because you're reminding them of a reality that people like to forget. No, we cannot forget the reality. So brothers and sisters, there's a lot we can learn from history. Now, there are great people in America. No one will deny that. We are winning the battle so far. 50% of the American people are on Trump's side, and the other 50% are on the Muslim side a little bit. They say to leave the Muslims alone, you know. But you know, you became the next boogeyman, and you became the new Negro. You know that. I mean, before 9/11, don't get mad with me. Before 9/11, I had a lot of Muslim brothers and sisters. They thought they were white. They sure thought they were white. And after 9/11, they said, Brother Abdul Malik, you know, why America is so racist? I said, Brother, I've been trying to tell you for a long time. You don't want to listen. Because, you know, when you have privilege, you don't want to deal with reality. See, many of you are privileged. You came educated. So you have equal access automatically to the gates of opportunity. You can live in a neighborhood of your choice. You can work at Microsoft and Amazon and work for these companies, and you can move up the corporate ladder. But your people, your ancestors, who the British rode on their backs, the British, the Spaniards, the French, the Portuguese, those people created in that part of the world that same trend of psychological slavery. And if we don't shake it off, then we can't free ourselves as a people. Why do some brothers look like they speak Arabic? And when I talk to them, they say, Padre Bonifacé. You need to know why you speak French. Why do you speak French? Why do you speak English? Why do you speak Spanish? Why? We need to know these things, because part of knowing that history is a healing for our people. Now, in my conclusion, the one thing slave people or slave masters hate is when a slave begins to assert his or her own God-given identity. When you begin to say, no, that's not who I am. This is who I am. For example, I tell people, I'm not African-American. Africanus is a European. Americano is a European. I'm not African-American. I'm not Negro neither. In fact, the true identity of who I am has been erased and lost in terms of the culture and the tribe that I came from. There are no Americans in the black community today that speak the native tongues of their ancestors. Gone. We lost it. We lost our names, our culture, our religion, our land. I don't know where I could go in Africa today and say, these are my people. Where should I go? Because Africa technically is not a country. It's a continent, as they call it. But in Africa, you have thousands of tribal societies and thousands of nations and cultures within the experience of the richness of the African people. Where do I go? I don't know. I don't know where to go. And why is that? Because I was robbed of the knowledge of myself. Now, what gives me a sense of identity that connects me to Africa is Islam. Once I became a Muslim and I declared my acceptance of the universal principles of Islam, I connected with Africa. Where there were Muslims, I was home. So I can meet an African Muslim brother, a brother from Turkey, a brother from Pakistan, a brother from India, a brother from Egypt, a brother from Somalia, a brother from Bosnia, a brother from any place or sister in the world and say, Assalamu alaikum. And I will be told, wa alaykum salam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. So Hajj, in my conclusion, is the unifying of the human family based upon the principles of truth that begins with the recognition of Allah. So what do we say at Hajj? Labbaik, Allahumma labbaik. Labbaik la sharika laka labbaik. Inna alhamda wa ni'mata laka wal mulk. La sharika laka. Allah, I'm here. I have heard your noble calling. I bear witness that there is no God except you. Labbaik, Allahumma labbaik. That unites me with all of my brothers and sisters. So whether they're black or white or Asian or African or American, male or female, Islam. So I conclude with this point. Some of the greatest people in America that push America and the black community towards liberation and freedom were those who got a taste of Islam. Muhammad Ali, what a magnificent American. Magnificent. Malcolm X, magnificent. If you study these two men and what they stood for, it would amaze you because they had the spirit of Sahaba. They knew they were born to be free. And when we deal with racial equality, we feel we free the slave and we free the slave master. Because if any man thinks he's better than another man because of the pigmentation of his skin, he's just like Shaitan. He has a devil's mind. Shaitan thought he was better than Adam because he said, Adam is made from clay, I'm from fire. But Shaitan didn't know that we use clay sometimes to put out the fire. When you want to put a fire out in California, they throw dirt on it. But he thought he was superior. So we should help America understand not just the beauty of what we call Islam, but its principles and its essentials as it pertains to humanity. أقول قولي هذا واستغفر الله ولكم وللسائر المسلمين كل ذنب فاستغفر الغفور الرحيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم والحمد لله رب العالمين والصلاة والسلام على أشرف المرسلين سيدنا وحبيبنا محمد صلى الله عليه وسلم. Give you a simple example in my conclusion. When we acknowledge human suffering, then we fight for that which we desire for ourselves. How come I'm from Brooklyn, New York, and I went to Palestine? I've been in Palestine myself. I've seen the conditions of the Palestinians. I've seen what they go through. I see their suffering. And I'm hurt sometimes when I see Muslims in America who come from Palestine, who forget the suffering of their people. Like they have stores, they have business now, they built homes, they sent a little money back, and but I don't see a strong movement of Muslims from Palestine to remind the American people and the Muslim community at large what the tragedy is. Why is that? Because some of us, once you come into the world of opportunity and comfort, you start relaxing. And then you put your foot up. And it's, yeah, mashallah. You going to Palestine? Oh, that's okay, I'll go in summertime. You go visit in the summer. But while you're not visiting them, they're suffering. The same thing we talk about Kashmir, or the Muslims in places like Somalia, or the Muslims of Afghanistan. Muslims all over the world, they need you. So I leave you with this, brothers and sisters. We are in a great place called the United States of America. This is a great country. It's God's country. It has many opportunities, but talking about our problems will not solve the problem. The one thing I want to leave you with is this. You must give your children a sense of purpose that is bigger than material possession. The Muslims in America have the ability to mobilize and organize in a manner that will liberate and empower Muslims all over the world. We need a vision. We need a plan, but it also must be considered highly classified. What I'm telling you is that you can't tell everybody what you want to do. People ask me sometime, are you going to run for office? I'm not, I don't know. Maybe I will, maybe I won't. But if I do one day, I won't tell you. You just wake up one morning, you see it on the news, like, oh my God, he's got Trump beat. That's 52%, right? No, I'm saying that to say one thing. We need a plan for our children. And I know my time is up, but I'm telling you right now, if you do not empower your children with a sense of ownership of America, do you see all the Muslim kids that was writing to Obama saying they feel afraid and they feel they're gonna be deported? And they, how come Muslim children feel that way? And many of them have fathers and mothers that live the middle class dream. Why do they feel excluded? It is because we have not shown them the courage of ownership and let the world know that we are America. This is as much as our country as anybody else's country that's here. And we don't intend to go anywhere. We don't intend to go anywhere. We're not running, we're not hiding. And when we trust in Allah and follow the principles of brotherhood in the pursuit of justice, you will make America a better place for everyone. You are the last group of people to make America great for everyone, because you represent every group of people across the globe. The Muslims are the last group of people that can contribute to America to make us come closer to what we call the perfect union of man and woman. You're the last group. So I hope that inshallah, throughout the duration of our time on this planet, we will do something to make it better. Not just for us and our children, but make it better for the world's children. اللهم اقسم لنا من خشيتك ما تبلغنا به جنتك ومن اليقين ما تهون به علينا مصائب الدنيا اللهم متعنا بأسمائنا وأبصارنا وقوتنا ما أحيتنا واجعله وارث منا واجعل ثأرنا على من ظلمنا وانصرنا على من عادانا ولا تجعل الدنيا أكبر همنا ولا مبلغ علمنا ولا تسلط علينا بذنوبنا من لا يرحمنا ولا يخاف منك رب العالمين ربنا آتنا في الدنيا حسنة وفي الآخرة حسنة وقنا عذاب النار اللهم نسألك بعلمك وبفضلك الكريم تجعلنا من أصحاب الجنة بفضلك ورحمتك أنت خير الراحمين اللهم صل وسلم على عبدك ورسولك الكريم محمد ابن عبد الله وعلى آله وصحبه ومن يتبع بإحسان يوم الدين وأقيم الصلاة آخر دعوة الحمد لله رب العالمين الله أكبر